Welcome back to Reflections, the second segment. And before Hector stopped me from violating the 18 or so minutes segment, we were talking about Albert Einstein and the importance of imagination. And although facts and figures and understandings are important, that is. And let me just say, this is the quotation. Let me give it in Spanish, and then I'll translate. Einstein no despreciaba el conocimiento, lo entendía como la base para construir algo más grande, pero estaba de acuerdo con que la verdadera inteligencia está en conectar ideas, en atreverse a pensar diferente al resto y en imaginar lo que aún no existe. He gave importance to knowledge as the base, you know, for constructing something big, something large. But more important is the ability to connect ideas, to dare to think differently from the rest, and to imagine what still does not exist. These days it's so easy to find out with Google and with the artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, and all the rest of the software programs that are available. So you can get facts very, very quickly. It's what you do with these facts. And beyond that, you have to challenge what people or what you obtain as facts. And sort of related to that is the fourth article that I wanted to get into. The Einstein was the fourth. The fifth article, which I think you'll get a kick out of, the use of ChatGPT by me. And what happened was that at Costco, I usually buy Greek organic yogurt, and now twice they didn't have it. The empty boxes were there, which by coincidence was an article that the different Costco products, the Kirkland brand, and one of the ones recommended was the Kirkland yogurt, the Greek yogurt. But next to it was sheep yogurt. And I said, well, you know, I looked at the statements, and of course it says it's better than, of course it's going to say that it's better than cow yogurt. And it looked, you know, pretty good in terms of the ingredients, the specifications. So I bought it, the book, and I said it tastes good, you know. No huge difference. It's a little bit smoother and all, but I decided to go in the ChatGPT, and I asked ChatGPT, let me get the printout of it. I asked them, and what's critical when you go into the to these programs is the question. And I said, please compare cow, goat, and sheep yogurt for an 82-year-old, me of course, in relatively good health, with only ailment being high blood pressure controlled via medications. So that was the question I posed to ChatGPT, and so I started off. So I obviously understood my question. It had three products that fulfilled, you know, the cow, the goat, and the sheep yogurt. It says it starts off with, for an 82-year-old who was otherwise in good health and whose only significant medical condition is well-controlled high blood pressure, all three types of plain, unsweetened yogurt can be healthy choices. The best option depends primarily on digestive tolerance, protein needs, calorie needs, and fat intake. And then it breaks down, the feature of each one, and it goes in and says the advantages of cow yogurt and of goat yogurt and of sheep yogurt, and which is, you know, the second page. So, you know, it's very specific, in terms of probiotics and calcium, fat, you know, calories, protein, digestibility, lactose. Those are, so it goes in the, you know, pretty specific details. And then it says, considerations for someone with high blood pressure. You know, the concern is not the type of milk, but choosing the yogurt that is plain, that's not unsweetened, and it's low in sodium. Most of them yogurts are low, and rich in potassium, calcium and magnesium that support healthy blood pressure. So this is, so which is best at age 22? Ta-da-ta-ta! And it says cheap yogurt is number one. Excellent for maintaining muscle and bone health because of its high protein content, etc. So it's recommending, you know, cheap yogurt. And then it basically says that recommending, and I also felt really good that it confirmed what I'm doing. It says that the more important, if you can get these other ingredients into the when you use yogurt, and it says the serving might include 3/4 cup plain yogurt, of course, fresh berries and fruits, a tablespoon of walnuts or almonds, and a sprinkle of ground flaxseed or chia seeds. And there I really felt good because this is exactly what I'm having every morning. That's my breakfast now. Yogurt with fruit and walnuts and almonds and those, you know, just nut, different kinds of nuts, and a sprinkle of flaxseed or chia seeds. Exactly what I've been doing. So when you read an article like this, when, you know, ChatGPT, and it comes back and it kind of confirms what you're doing, well, you know, makes you feel good. At the end, though, given going back to Einstein, all this information, you got to analyze it, and you got to decide, you know, what's best for you. And I've come to the conclusion that it's saying here that it's best for protein nutrients. It says best overall, plain low-fat Greek cow yogurt for the combination of protein, calcium, affordability, and strong research supporting healthy aging. And so even though at moments there it says that cheap is the best, when I go into the weight situation, the more calorie and the fat content, which, you know, for dealing with high blood pressure, I think I'm going to go back to, if I can find it, to the cow yogurt and you know, the Greek cow yogurt. So I hope you got a kick out of it. But that's, you know, the use of ChatGPT and analyzing it. And so it gives you all this information, all kinds of data. It even gives you recommendations. In fact, you know, at the end of the day, you read all of it and you say, well, I think thank you for all the information and even thank you for the recommendation. But I'm going to give more importance to the calorie and the fat. And if the Greek yogurt has everything, most of the other things, and I can put the protein with these nuts and flaxseed and chia, I'm going to go back to Greek. So that's where it is. Okay, well, those are the five articles that I got a kind of a kick on to reflect on and that basically, you know, told me that where I was doing was within the ballpark and all. Actually, there are articles also, but they're so, it's not so much that I was in full agreement with it, but is two articles on Iran. And to the extent that I felt good is that last week I reflected on the developments that have been happening with respect to Iran and Israel and the Gulf and the U.S., the population, everything. And message I wanted to come across is that it's driving a wedge between the U.S. and Israel, driving a wedge with the U.S. and It's the Gulf nations within the U.S. population. It has had its repercussions, I think, good and bad for Ukraine, but it has had its repercussions and all. And so it basically been driving a wedge. And one of them, of course, as I said, was the Gulf nations. And both of these articles that came out, one is the Telegraph, which is Britain, and it says that the Gulf plans to cut the U.S. out of Iran deal, and this basically says that the talks that are happening between Iran and Oman, and then between Oman and Qatar, and between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and Qatar and in other words, between these different Gulf countries, and all aimed at hammering out what regional coexistence would look like once the war dust settled, and proceeds to describe that they want to retain the relationship with the U.S. and even maintain the bases and all, but Plan B and C, just feeling that they have to take action. Another wedge was with Europe. So as Europe has also made decisions, they've got to take care of themselves and make this, agreements with Iran. I got a kick out of it. It says Gulf diplomats and experts have also highlighted that they believe Iran would not simply let go of what it regards as its ultimate trump card, and that they need to be realistic regarding potential outcome. That pun, about trump card. The Telegraph understands that there are ongoing ideas floated for the possible scheme in which, in quote, service fees will be collected, ostensibly to cover the cost of demining the strait, mitigate environmental degradations, port charges, or for insurance purposes. This is something that the U.S. is really going to be tough on, but this is what Iran, and they found that they have this tool, is going to be insisting on. And that's the push and pull that we have in reaching an agreement. Because I think the nuclear, frankly, Iran never has always said that they don't pretend they don't have to develop a nuclear weapon, but so for they're saying now that they won't do it. Well, that's what they've always said. So it's a question of fiscalizing and making sure it doesn't happen. But the problem is that. Also worry that this would create a dangerous precedent, to have the Straits have a service fee, a tariff, whatever we call. And the other article, which goes right along with it, is the Iran war gives, in quote, Switzerland of the Middle East, and the quote, key say and fate of Hormuz. And this basically ties, this is a Newsweek article, and it ties the role of, we mentioned Oman, which the other country that is across from the Hormuz Strait. So it's the two of them that kind of control the straits, and that Oman is being the mediator, the catalyst to see if they can put something together that makes sense for everybody. Easier said than done. And it says that the U.S. is kind of upset because what has been the Oman neutrality in their role that they're now trying to undertake is vitally said neutrality. That's where they're. What I found interesting is that the document outlines that. That's the memorandum of agreement. Excuse me. This we're talking about, not the article. I'm referring now. In quoted the memorandum of agreement supposedly says that that Iran would engage in a dialogue with Oman, in quote, to define the future administration and maritime services in the Strait of Hormuz, in discussions with other Persian Gulf littoral states. In literal littoral, countries that are on the shores of the Strait of Hormuz, and connects in discussion with other Persian Gulf littoral states in line with applicable international law and sovereign rights of coastal states of the Strait of Hormuz. That's in the agreement. Well, you know, it's got to be faced. And what it says here, what that's also interesting, is that the alleged Omani plan, previously reported by the Telegraph, would mirror models enacted in two other key trade corridors, the Strait of Malacca and Singapore Strait, where countries dependent on the waterways contribute to a private fund dedicated to maintaining them. So that wedge that I mentioned between the U.S. And Israel and the Gulf countries, according to these two articles, is leading to some kind of agreement on how the straits are going to be administered, and it obviously creates a problem for what the U.S. has been insisting on. We'll see where that goes, but it's a problem that we have in that particular thing. So. I have a minute, but I think what I'm going to do before I start on the next topic, we'll take a break now and have a pause. This is Jorge Gonzalez, Reflections.